This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Massachusetts currently has about 45,000 people on adult criminal probation. That's according to the State House News Service. When Governor Charlie Baker signed the state's $52 billion budget in July, life got more affordable for those 45,000 people. Now, before, a court could assign fees associated with being on probation or parole, and those fees varied. But you could, for example, look at maybe $80 a month. The budget packet eliminated those fees. It also took Massachusetts out of the mainstream as one of only three states doing it. So why do it? And what difference might it make, not only in the lives of those on probation and parole, but across the board? So with us now to talk more about that, Christine Cole, former executive director of the Crime and Justice Institute, which is a division of the nonprofit Community Resources for Justice. Christine, welcome back.
Thank you, Tiziana. It's great to be here with you, and I appreciate and thank you for the invitation.
Well, and I should note for our listeners, lest they wonder if this is an important subject, you are talking to us from France. It was so important to you to talk about this, so thank you.
Oh, it's great. It's a treat I'm taking for myself between work, and you're right. It is that important to talk about, and I'm, again, happy to be with you.
So you worked on probation and parole when you were at Crime and Justice Institute. Do you approve of what Massachusetts is doing, and are you surprised that we're doing it?
I am a little surprised, and I'm more than a bit enthusiastic about it. I think it's among the most progressive things that Massachusetts has done on criminal justice reform, and it's time. It's time to think about strategies that stop to exacerbate inequality. So I think it's very exciting.
So I want to dive into all of that, and I'll tell you one of the reasons I find this so interesting, Christine, is that on the one hand, it makes a lot of sense if one dives into the policy. On the other hand, it is so easy to publicly criticize this, and it does make Massachusetts an outlier. So I want to hit both of those things. Let's start, Christine, with the make sense side, and we're going to give you a little sound here. So we spoke with Antonio Gendra of Boston. He was released from prison 18 months ago. He's on parole. In his situation, he will be for the rest of his life. He says leaving incarceration was hard on his soul, and he felt like a ghost when he was looking for a job and for housing because he has no history in society beyond the wall.
And just trying to reacclimate yourself back into society is rough enough if you've been anything like over 10 years, you know. And for me, it was 24. So when I got out, I didn't even know how to use the phone. And everything was through the phone, application, job application, Zoom meetings were at an all-time high. So it was very confusing and unwanted stress that it causes upon a person after being incarcerated for that long to come out and pay at the same time with no job. Never mind if he doesn't have a trade if he gets out.
I mean, good luck posting your resume on Indeed, if that's the case. And $80 may not seem like a lot, but it can be a ton if you're in that situation. So can I assume this is why you're enthusiastic, Christine?
That's so right. And, you know, when you think about that gentleman, he's been incarcerated for an extended period of time, so he doesn't have an extraordinarily positive work history, as he said, outside the wall. Not only that, but we create even more encumbrances for folks to get jobs if they have a criminal record. So he's starting a couple of rungs down the ladder just because he has a criminal record. And as he said, I want to figure out how to get a job. Well, how do you get a job? How do you pay a fine when you don't have employment, you don't have an employment history? And if he's like most people who are coming out of prison, he doesn't have a bed to sleep in that's safe, never mind a job that pays a living wage.
Do most people know that when you come out of prison, you know, you come out with the supplies you went in with, and in Antonio's case 24 years ago, and you just literally start from scratch? And am I wrong that that's really what happens?
No, I think you're absolutely correct. That is what happens. And whether people, you know, I'm not even sure, Tiziana, that people think about that, right? We've gone through decades of harsh on crime or tough on crime and significant severe treatment of folks who have committed crimes. And Massachusetts is not an outlier in this. It's something we've done across the country, but we've piled on ways to make it more difficult, even if that wasn't our intent, to be successful, right? And the elimination of these fees starts to make it more manageable, or frankly, even conceivable, that you can start to level a playing field and eliminate what within the industry we'll call collateral consequences, right? The crime and the conviction and the sentence are only one part of the consequence that folks suffer and experience when they've been incarcerated.
So let's stay there, because I know that one of the pieces of pushback is, why shouldn't there be more consequence? There are costs to society for people who have committed crimes to re-enter society. And why shouldn't people coming out on probation and parole participate in offsetting those costs?
So costs are both economic and opportunity, aren't they, right? And isn't the punishment, the consequence of your offense, the time you spend in prison? Why do we need to make it difficult to get housing, to get employment, to secure a reasonable savings account? In other parts of the world, you know, you mentioned I'm here from France, I'm not here studying, but I do know that in other parts of the world, once you finish with your sentence, you really are free and welcome to start over again. And in the U.S., categorically, we've not permitted that because we pile on lots of additional costs, even not financial ones, to the punishment or the sentence that one gets for being found responsible for a crime.
Christine, I want to stay in this pushback space a minute longer. And what's lurking in the back of my mind is, I know that you spent time in the victim advocate space, right? Working in law enforcement from the perspective of the victim. I can also imagine people saying, I don't want the state to become an outlier in making it easier for people if I've been a victim. Can you address that?
Sure. You know, I think that my fundamental premise, Tiziana, is that the criminal justice system is not designed to sort of make, you know, eliminate your feeling of victimization. It's not designed to make you whole. It's designed to sort out the facts, the truth, and mete out justice. And so judges are in the unenviable position of trying to sort out what's rational for punishment without disrespecting the harm to the Commonwealth as well as the individual victim of a crime. And quite frankly, I don't believe that any sentence can ever make the victim feel whole again or completely satisfied. And in my view, that's why the victim is not the ultimate arbiter of the decision. It is a judge who looks at every case differently, or looks at every case as compared to each other, right? It's not about what happens to just this person, because what happens to just this person is horrifying. We also have to look at what happens to the other person, the person who's been convicted of a crime. What do we expect of that person? Do we expect them to complete their punishment and resume a life that allows them to be contributing members of society? Or do we want them to participate in this never-ending revolving door of going in and out of prison and not being able to stabilize themselves, not being able to be contributing members of society? So victims may have some criticism about this. Offenders and people who have experienced the system have criticisms of the inequality that it exacts on them. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So what's the evenness that we're trying to get to? I mean, our job is to be fair arbiters of justice. And I don't take lightly the concern that some victims may have, but do you want somebody to come out of prison or be on probation and find ways to be successful? Or do you want them to continue on that you know, as I spoke about the revolving door.
So let's pick up on that thread. And we're talking with Christine Cole, former executive director of the Crime and Justice Institute, about the state's move to eliminate parole and probation fees. So, Christine, a little more now from Antonio Gendro. You know, the fees, you could be looking at $50 to $65 a month for probation fees, parole fees of roughly $800 a month. And here he is talking about what that means for some people.
I would say, you know, it all depends on how high in the food chain you are to say that. You know, giving away a $300, that could be lunch, that could be me trying to do something for my grandson, you know, and be there for my daughter and put some money away to try to save up to get an apartment. So I need every penny if I am to survive and get a place to live. I'm making like $2,200 a month. And then I'm trying to pay rent. They're trying to move in. They talk about over 30% of my pay. I got to push towards my rent. And then an extra $100 on top of that would be woof.
So really clear case from Antonio why it matters to him. Last year, the state collected about $7.9 million through supervision fees. So it's not a lot of revenue for the state. You know, in our last minute or so, can we afford this? And do we need to find some other place to get that money? Will we starve something that's important by not collecting those dollars?
You know, the state budget is enormous. And as you say, $7 or $8 million, while it's not insignificant compared to the totality of the state budget, it sure sounds like a drop in the bucket to me. Part of how I think about budgets is they certainly give us a sense of what our moral basis is, right? And if we want to help people be successful and not contribute to continued reincarceration, which costs far more than probation does, then this is the right thing to do. And, you know, when people don't pay their fines and fees, they can find themselves reincarcerated, even if their initial sentence did not include incarceration. For example, people who are on probation who find themselves unable to pay these fines and fees in a way that Antonio talked about because they're trying to pay $2,200 a month plus the security deposit plus the first month's rent or the last month's rent and perhaps feed a family. They can't do it, and they're looking at driver license loss or return to prison.
All right. That is Christine Cole, former executive director of the Crime and Justice Institute, a division of the nonprofit Community Resources for Justice, who's worked on probation and parole. Christine, thanks for the perspective. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Enjoy France.
Have a lovely day.
You too.